Good evening, Little Saigon, Seattle. Good evening to all the people across the world, across the planet, across the orbis, across the universe. If you're out there, good evening. It is roughly 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The date is January the 23rd, 2020. Yes, it is Thursday. Fuck. And the pandemic of the coronavirus rages on. Seattle is becoming a city of madness. People of the city are going crazy. They're going cocaine crazy. They're picking up their forks and their knives, their spoons, their sporks, their fucking pitchforks. They're grabbing their bike chain and their bats. They're gonna take care of business, this fucking virus, man. As of today, I guess, if we want to read the headline from Zero Hedge, the death toll is 25. Now, as I drink my cocoa, I got to tell you something. And yes, it is cocoa. I'm not going to eat the mountain-grown coffee of the people of up the Buddhistan. That's right, the virus, the disease that is raging onward. People are dead. That's a slow day for, you know, U.S. Air Force drone attacks on innocent people at weddings, so yeah. That's a slow day for the U.S. military-industrial complex since 9/11-25. So when we start killing more, when this virus starts killing more than the total deployed U.S. forces, secret and not secret, worldwide, then we should get concerned. And so 25, I think, yeah, that's not even per day. That's just the total so far. That doesn't really rank too high against the neocons and the military-industrial complex. So, yes, you know, be concerned, but hey, it's a question of how you measure your concerns, right? But I suppose if you're sitting comfortable in some fancy-pants razzmatazz town someplace, I don't know, in Texas, if you live razzmatazz in Texas, maybe you're safe from the virus. Yes, 8 cities, more than 23 million people are under quarantine in China. Multiple cases worldwide now. Scotland's got the disease. They think that there's 830 infected in China. You know, Taiwan, Macau, Hong Kong, Vietnam, fucking Japan. The World Health Organization says, not time to declare global health emergency. Well, that's good. Oh, a patient in Texas recently traveled to Wuhan. I guess Texas ain't so safe either, right? The World Health Organization estimates coronavirus is about as contagious as the Spanish flu. Fuck. More than twice as infectious as the common flu. Yeah, so according to the World Health Organization, this particular virus, this virus from Wuhan, this virus that came from the unholy sex of bats, snakes, fucking pigs, they were all listening to Metallica. Yes, they were all listening to Metallica as they had their wretched satanic anal butt sex. Fucking bats and snakes and pigs and chimpanzee monkey. What the fuck? What the fuck, people? Fucking, this virus is bullshit. It might be real, though. Who knows, right? It's the great discontinuity on planet Earth. Now, the Spanish flu killed a lot of people, that is true. But recently, there have been studies, and I'm going to leave this for you to research, but there have been studies that show that potentially the real origin of the Spanish flu epidemic of World War I was United States training bases in 1917 and 1918, that our own government, with the help from maybe the Rockefellers, maybe others, who the fuck knows, but our own government developed bioweapons and wanted to end the war, you know, peace in our time. So why not get people infected with some terrible fucking disease? Truly, I don't know the purpose behind the monstrous bullshit that the people do, the people that run the world. I don't know why they do what they do. If you want to ascribe a motive, feel free. All I can see is the catastrophe, the wreckage, the shit that they leave behind. It's like this fucking virus. Maybe it's real. Maybe it's natural. Maybe it just sort of popped up out of nature's womb like so many things do. Or maybe it came from good old Uncle Mao Zedong's crazy-ass biolabs warfare project, fuck. Or maybe it came from, you know, good old Uncle Sam's magical up-the-butt, experimental bacteriological viral clinic for the inspection of crabs and lice. Yes, it could have come from us people. And it kind of, it's interesting, that whole pig epidemic, you know? There was the epidemic that killed the pigs, and now there's this shit. So I want you to think about this disease for a second, but I want you to think of it not in terms of mortality, because that might be the wrong way to think about it. Let's pretend for a second that this is bad. And I'm going to explain what I mean by bad. And it's legitimately bad. It's not a psyop. I frankly still believe it's a psyop, but let's say it's real. Let's say it's a real thing. Now, it could be a real thing that escaped from a lab. It could be a real thing that's part of some sort of biological warfare campaign. Who the fuck knows? Or it could be a real thing that popped up because people were eating bats and snakes in Wuhan, and they weren't really cooking them well enough. You know why Uncle Dan likes his meat cooked well? I don't want to swap spit with the creatures I kill. Remember, every creature you eat, you're not just eating that one pig. You're eating every pig it had sex with. You're eating every chicken it had an affair with. Every time you eat a pig, you're not just eating that fucking pig. And this applies to eating beef or eating fucking fish. You're not just eating that one fucking fish, my friend. You're eating every fish it had butt sex with. Do you think it had protected sex? No. So if you're gonna eat meat, take a page out of Uncle Dan's paleo, what the fuck, good thing the fucking caveman discovered fire cookbook, and make sure you cook your meat well. I mean well. I don't mean raw. If you wanna become an incubator for Uncle Mouse A. Tung's or Uncle Sam's up the butt biological warfare bullshit, yeah, you can order your meat raw. But I highly recommend it well done. You know all the fucking shit in recent years about well-done meat being cancerous? You ever think that might be a psyop? Like, maybe they want people to get sick? It's like the whole zero-fat diet. I think that killed some people. The low-fat, no-fat diet. Yeah, except, you know, we kind of need that. And what did we replace the fat with? Carbs. That was good for us. Well, not really for us. It was good for the companies that needed to sell a lot of really unhealthy food. And what's more important, to get people used to terribly poisonous, unhealthy food. That was good, wasn't it? So I want you to meditate on this question. Which is more dangerous at this point? Is it mortality or is it the being sick part? Because here's the thing. If you had a version of the flu that simply made people just really fucking sick, like really sick for 2 to 3 weeks, number one, it's going to kill some people because there are a lot of people, and if you look at the first people that have died from this, they kind of fit into that category. There are a lot of people who are kind of like, you know, in a not so great state, physically speaking. And so anything that would knock you out, like the worst flu ever, would probably kill a lot of people who are kind of on the edge anyways. But that's not really the concern here. What would happen if you simply had the flu? And yes, it killed a few people, but mostly it just incapacitated people for like 2 to 3 weeks. And you'll say to yourself, well, Dan, that doesn't sound so bad. Well, you kind of have to consider something. There are a lot of things we can do without for 2 to 3 weeks. We can probably do without, you know, the cable TV and maybe even the internet. And we could do without, yeah, but we can't do without the electricity because we need that for what? What do we need electricity for in cities? Well, if you've been wise enough to dig tunnels under rivers as a city, you need electricity to run the water pumps all the time. Or those tunnels, the ones you use to get out of New York City, yeah, they fill with water. Did anyone ever tell you that? And we've often discuss the issue of nuclear power on the Little Saigon Report. And here's the thing, folks. Here's the thing. A boiling water reactor has to constantly keep itself cool, okay? Which means that it has to run cold water through the reactor well, where the reactor is. If the reactor well heats up, the control rods start to break down. If the control rods break down, the reactor melts down. That's it. Once you lose the control rods, you're fucked. I mean, yeah, maybe someone told you they have magical, super fancy bullshit to take an uncontrolled reactor and put it back under control. But you know what? They don't. They're lying to you. If they had that, they would have used it at Fukushima, and they didn't, because they don't have that. So once they lose the control rods, it's over. It doesn't matter. You could start pumping water full speed. Once the control rods are gone, you are fucked. Okay? So here's the thing. What if this was just a really bad fucking flu that didn't necessarily kill everybody, but was highly contagious? It was contagious in the sweet spot sense, which means that people would be contagious without showing symptoms initially. That's the key. You have to be contagious, but asymptomatic. And preferably for a few days, right? For a few days, a few handshakes. A few handshakes, a few hugs, a few kisses with your boyfriend, you're asymptomatic, but you're highly fucking contagious. And now your boyfriend is, yeah, asymptomatic, but highly contagious. And you know what? His boss and his boss's three hookers, now they're kind of fucking contagious. Yeah, you can see how that goes, folks. So, anywho, if this were simply a flu that knocked people out, where people needed to hydrate themselves, in fact, better yet, if it knocked you out in such a way that you might be okay by yourself, maybe, but you really wouldn't be able to take care of anyone else, if it was that debilitating, like imagine the worst fucking flu ever, you know, really high fever, lots of nausea. Imagine what happens to the hospitals first. Because here's the thing, folks. There are enough people who are borderline from a health perspective in the United States today that if they all got this fucking whatever the fuck it is, the magical bat, snake, up the butt flu, they would flood the hospitals, and all of a sudden, the hospitals don't have any capacity, and it gets worse from there, people. Because the nurses and the doctors are human beings, too. And the artificially intelligent robot has not arrived from, you know, Star Wars land. And so, yes, you could find a hospital that has nobody to take care of patients, or at least not enough people. And that just happens in the first couple months. Yeah, the first couple months, really. If it is a flu that goes around the world more than once, then we're talking about more than one wave. But the world is not the world of 1918 any longer. Okay, this isn't 1917 or 1918. Stuff moves very quickly, and stuff is highly dependent. Economics, logistics, all these things are very fragile. So, yes, it's true, you can shut down a country, but then what? How do you feed people? How do you maintain water? Because if you say, well, Dan, it's only going to incapacitate me for 3 weeks, yes, in the first wave. And then there's going to be the second wave and the third. And by the time that happens, I think you're going to find out that human society will have degraded a bit. Now, if we're lucky in that sense, it isn't a high mortality rate thing, but still, you have to ask the question, which is worse, the deaths or the wounded? Because the wounded, which in this case means the sick takes people to take care of them, you know, the sick. If you just don't want your grandma and your grandpa or your little kids to die, if you just don't want people to get killed by this thing, the person you love, then you're going to take care of that person. So even if you're, for whatever luck or whatever luck of the Irish, even if you're immune to this, you're still going to probably spend a lot of time taking care of somebody. And that means you won't be doing your job. So the only question is it okay then that this virus doesn't kill people if one of the effects of the virus is to essentially, you know, cause society to grind to a halt for a while? And how long can society handle that? My basic contention is things are so fragile now that anything remotely like the Spanish flu pandemic could potentially tip things over. And the question is, would it be a tipping over event that we can recover from? You know, you tip over the bucket and your marbles roll out and you lose some of them, but you put the rest in and you tip the bucket back up again and everything's okay. And if that's the case, then fine. But what if it's one of those situations where the bucket tips over and the marbles go everywhere and no amount of effort is ever going to get those marbles back in the fucking bucket? I don't know. I don't know, folks, but this is is it a scary topic? I really don't know. For me personally, I'm 50 years old. I don't have kids. Something is going to kill me in the next 20 to 30 years. That is a virtual certainty. I don't expect to live to be into my 90s or be 100. I think that's a lot of fantastical bullshit. From when I was young and when I believed in the technological utopia to come, the opposite is probably true. The opposite is true. The technology is probably starting to kill us. And yeah, I don't expect to see 80, even if this fucking virus is bullshit, which it probably is, some kind of bullshit. I still stick to my guns on that. You know, I don't know that we should suddenly, until we're seeing casualties that rival the United States military in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, until we get into those categories, then I think we can probably put this into the, okay, so what? However, because we're talking about nature, and because we're talking about non-linear mathematics, things could get really messy fast. So within a week or two, we're going to find out how real this is. If this is like the Spanish flu, or worse, then within a few weeks, people are just going to start getting really sick. And a lot of people will get sick, and they'll be sick for a week, and then they'll get better, and they'll say, oh, it's all fine, it's all good. And I think that might be a mistake. It's not to say that, you know, it's better if it kills us, but the thing is, it's almost as bad if it simply takes a fragile society and puts it under pressure it can't take. That's almost as bad. And here's the other horrible thought before we go on to the next horrible topic. In recent podcasts, I've mentioned this concept, you know, this phrase, this term of art, whatever. It's not just a military thing, but a lot of people in the military will learn this. Popping smoke, you know? When you need to retreat, when you need to escape. When you need to cover your retreat, cover your exit. And really it's conceal, not cover, because in technical terms, cover protects you from indirect fires and small arms fire, basically. Cover protects you. It's really concealment. And the thing is, you pop smoke to conceal your escape, to conceal your exit, to conceal the fact that you need to get out of fucking Dodge. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, there's this worldwide cabal, and we don't know why they do what they do. And that's fine. I may never understand people that make over $1 million a year, because I've never been like those people. Maybe I'm simply too stupid. That's the other thing too, folks. It might be the case that these people are just really smart, and therefore we will never understand their concerns or their wealth or their decisions or the things they gotta fucking do in order to maintain the world order. Who the fuck knows? Maybe that's what's going on here. But one of the things that's occurred to me in recent months, especially with all the fucking disclosure, you know, the fucking Epstein bullshit and all the obvious crap and all the obvious lies and all the disclosure, it's overwhelming. It's like, it's so much information, I don't think people can even process it. And then you inject this fucking virus. It's almost like a perfect formula for covering people, you know, getting out of Dodge, so to speak. Like, if you knew at your level, you're at that level where you're probably a billionaire. But if you're at that level and you knew something was coming, and I don't know what it is, folks, it could be anything. I have said in the past, I am a cosmological agnostic, and I tend to be very skeptical of any doomsday theory, period. Even the fucking scenarios that involve methane, which frankly, yeah, looks interesting from a perspective of it could be bullshit. I don't think it is. But yeah, even that, you know, it's a doomsday scenario. You should be fucking skeptical of that shit. You know what I'm saying? But the scenario I imagine is one where basically the rich and the powerful need to get out of fucking town. And how do you do that without everybody fucking noticing? Everyone's gonna notice. People will notice. Believe it or not, the problem with being famous and rich is that you're famous and rich. And people notice the fame and the money, or both. They notice these things. They notice the money moving. They notice the famous people disappearing. And the horrible thought I had too was around about the time Philip Seymour Hoffman killed himself. Because I don't know why he did it. We'll probably never know. But one of the thoughts I had, because it seemed like, you know, famous people were killing themselves, at least a few people, and that's a thing that always happens, so it's not special, but the thought I had was this. What if at a certain level, you can accidentally hear things you never want to hear? Like, what if at a certain level, you can be in a room and overhear two people talking about some event in the future where billions of people are going to die and there's nothing anybody can do about it, and right now the best people are basically figuring out how some people can survive someplace. And oh yeah, have you been to Antarctica yet? Hint, hint. Have you seen the complexes in Antarctica? Have you been down and inspected your condo yet? You got one, Philip. There's a special condo for actors, and you're going to be there, buddy. You're going to be with us in Antarctica as the human race screams and writhes in pain as it's baked or cooked alive in whatever fucking calamity is to befall it. Maybe it is the viral apocalypse. Maybe people get diseases and die. Maybe it's that methane bullshit. Maybe it's some type of robot system or nanites. Maybe it's simply the plague of madness. It's growing. And they know the plague is affecting everything. Who knows why people who have billions of dollars do things? I don't know. But yeah, one of my horrible thoughts in recent months is some of these things are distractions. And I gotta say, a pandemic that knocked people out for a few weeks, didn't necessarily kill them, but just knocked them out, it's kind of a perfect cover for getting out of Dodge before the next fucking shoe drops. So yeah, I guess that's some happy thinking right there. I have one or two listeners that I think, I'm glad they listen, but I worry sometimes that when they listen, they don't disconnect. They don't say, well, this is just a fucking burnout. This is a drifter. This is some dude in Little Saigon. What the fuck does he know? Between him and his shitty keyboard and his shitty fucking abilities and his bullshit, what the fuck does he know? And I don't know. I don't know if I have any clue about anything. One of the subjects that has come up in recent months on my podcast is, you know, the subject of things that we fear, things that I fear. Like, if you were to imagine the most fearful future, what future would be the worst? You have that in your head. Well, I can tell you what mine is. My dystopia is what we currently are living in, and it simply gets worse and worse and worse until I die. And all I'll really know when I die is that it was always going to be that way. and it was always going to be this pathetic progression towards a darker, darker society, more control, more wars, more lies, more bullshit, more poisons, more cancer, more diabetes, just more of all the things that totally disgust me and horrify me in that sense. My fear is that this is the thing, that this is going to be the thing until I die, this reality. And I don't mean personally. I'm not talking about money. In fact, money's not even the issue here. I'm talking about this rather dehumanizing existence we've all kind of accepted and we plugged ourselves into, and maybe the worst thing is that we don't even know how to disconnect. So, and I've called this, you know, the infinite gray nothing. The infinite gray nothing that stretches to the distance, and it only stretches to the distance in the sense that, yes, eventually everything does fall apart, but it just goes on so long you might as well not even think about it, how or why it ends. But this particular fear of this dystopia, it kind of covers up another fear of mine or concern of mine. And you could argue that it is my ultimate fear. My ultimate fear. My ultimate, penultimate, my penultimate fear, my greatest fear. Let's drink some cocoa. If you listen to my podcast, you know I talk about God and that I call myself a Christian. And I also say, you know, that I don't think I'm a very good Christian, so that not that that gives me any special cover, but I'm simply stating facts. You know, I am a Christian, probably kind of a shitty one. In fact, so shitty that we're about to go into my greatest fear, which technically would contradict my faith. And I talked about this a little bit in recent podcasts, but I just want to just nail it to the wall so everyone is clear. My greatest fear isn't just that this infinite gray nothing goes on forever. That's kind of horrible, but it's not my greatest fear. My greatest fear is that none of this means anything. That I am just a chunk of crap. That whatever delusions of awareness I have are really just delusional. And that consciousness itself is probably a disease. That consciousness is a kind of genetic disorder. And that the lucky creatures, which is probably every other fucking creature, they live in something below consciousness. They live in the body, in the instincts. They're connected. The problem with consciousness is it disconnects us. It separates us. So my fear is not only is consciousness special, but it's worse than that. It really is a disorder of evolution. It should never have happened. Okay? We should never have become conscious, because the only outcome of that consciousness, that awareness, is pain. The only outcome of it is regret and pain and sadness and deception and lying and propaganda and government and all the fucking shit we do. And you can say, well, Dan, what about art and music and poetry? Listen, I love all the things you just mentioned, but then I look at what we spend most of our resources on, most of our time on, and I see three things. I see fighting, fucking, and feeding. We spend tremendous amounts of resources on blowing things up, which includes people. Yeah, we spend a lot of money on blowing things up. We spend a lot of time and resources on pornography and fucking in general, the whole philosophy of fucking. That's really great. And then there's the feeding, the eating. And listen, it's important to eat, okay? I you know, I'm not going to go there because I'm by far not the healthiest person. So if you're going to say, well, Dan, are you about to beat up on people? No, not on the issue of weight. I am overweight. I'm currently fat. Mainly the reason why I'm fat is because I've just been kind of a hermit the last couple months, and I need to get out and I need to go for a walk. But then on the other hand, I look outside and I don't know. My greatest fear is that not only is there no God, but there's no nothing. That I became aware in a cold, dead place. And it's even worse than solipsism, because I can't even stake a claim to my own existence being anything but noise, like static. Like you turn on a radio, but there's no station there. That is my greatest fear. Every fear I have comes from it, that no matter how much I know nothing. That's not so bad. But no matter how much I know, it's not simply that I know nothing, but there was never anything worth knowing. That whatever you think you know is true, guess what? It doesn't really matter. That Pascal's wager, where he says, you know, if you're an atheist, you should still believe in God, because the payoff is the infinite paradise. But the problem is, I think Pascal's reasoning is broken. There, he's talking about something that might exist, but every day he's alive, he's dealing with what does exist, what is in front of him. My greatest fear is this is all just a big fucking accidental pile of shit that we blinked into existence just long enough to see a universe that we did not understand, and we had just enough time to develop lies and falsehood surrounding this universe, and then we're gone. And that's the human condition. That's what's left. That's everything. We came into existence. We were here. We were aware. We created culture and language and all kinds of fucking things, and then we were gone. And other than really terribly toxic shit, you know, like radioactive material, there's very little we're going to leave behind that anyone will ever remember. Maybe nothing at all. Other than, like I said, really terribly poisonous shit. Everything else will degrade. Everything else will fall apart. Give it 20,000 years, give it 1 million years. And then, you know, after 1 million or 20 million years, even the radioactive materials become a kind of substrate of something else. They transform. They go through their cycle. And so even then, if an alien species came along and found some strip of some heavy metals and whatnot that were still a little radioactive, what would they really know 20 million years from now? If they could even find it, if the Earth itself had not transformed so much that it didn't swallow it up and distribute it, what would they really know 20 million years from now? My greatest fear isn't just that life is pointless, but that it's pointless to even ask that question. That is my greatest fear. Which means every time I go to sleep at night, I die. And every day that I wake up, I'm reborn. But I'm not reborn with youth. I'm simply reborn older and more bitter and more broken down. All the hustle and all the bustle, all the moving around, all the fucking excitement, all the fucking crazy, all the love and all the hate, all the fear, the joy, every fucking human emotion for tens of thousands of years, all of it could amount to nothing but nothing. And that even conceiving of it is pointless. And that even the thoughts about the conceptions themselves are a waste of fucking time. Last topic, another good one. So in recent months and years, I've seen a trend, and not just on Zero Hedge, but in lots of fucking outlets of news, I don't know how to phrase that, news outlets, whether it's the Drudge Report, or, excuse me, whether it's the Drudge Report, or CNN, or Fox News, or even fucking Zero Hedge, they do these articles that amount to shaming the poor. Like, it's not enough to tell people that being homeless makes you the worst person in the world. So, like, in my case, you're left with the reality that people would prefer that you just killed yourself. And really, that is the truth. You know, here in Seattle, if you are my age and you end up in the streets, most people would prefer if you just killed yourself. I'm sorry, I just told you something that may seem confusing. But every time they tell, well, I saw the Como documentary, Dan. We just want to send you guys away someplace. I know, to do something like what Rhode Island did. Yes, like Rhode Island. Well, I don't know what they're doing in Rhode Island. But I do know about that euphemism, someplace. And in general, someplace tends to really suck. And someplace tends to be a place where people go to die. In fact, someplace tends to be an open-air camp where people go to die. Maybe we call it a death camp? Yeah. So there was an article on Zero Hedge about people not ready for economic collapse, and I think it was a Michael Snyder article. The link will be included in the description. And I don't, you know, Michael Snyder's always got like fucking terrible shit to say. In fact, there's a couple of these authors on Zero Hedge that all they really do is give you lists of reasons why everything's going to hell. And you know what? You could probably accuse good old Uncle Dan of the same bullshit. So you know what? I should shut the fuck up there. Because really, I kind of do that too. I try not to make it all about things going wrong, but yeah, we try. But the thing is, what is avoidable is shaming the poor. So it's one of these articles that says most Americans don't have $1,000. Okay, I agree most don't to deal with the collapse. And if you think that's the worst problem we face, you are more confused than most of those Americans. The basic argument is, well, you must have faith in the economy to only have $1,000. No, 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 no. The reason why people are poor is because our economy is broken. The reason why people are poor is because we basically have a command economy. We have neo-Stalinism. You are a slave on the Death Star. This is a sideways, broken, militaristic Death Star cabal. And guess what? Those things don't tend to produce great jobs. They produce jobs that involve poisoning people and stabbing people, and maybe jobs that involve things like surgery too, right? But they don't, in general, produce economies that, you know, keep everybody employed, because they're mostly about blowing the fucking world up. And it turns out nobody really wants or pays for that product if they have a fucking choice. When you tell people that they must have faith in a stupid system, or that they're stupid because they don't have $1,000 in savings, you need to understand something. Some of these people might like have tons of money. For example, good old Uncle Dan here in Little Saigon, I could go work for fucking Willy Wonka's and go crazy and save some money and somehow make that work. But a lot of people just don't have that option, and the jobs they end up getting are really shitty jobs. And if they happen to have a family, they're trying to keep their family alive on really shitty jobs. And then here you're going to write an article saying they must trust the system. No, just the opposite, buddy. This is where you're a fucking moron. They don't trust the system. They're being fucked by the system. And now you're telling them that the system that's fucking them, which probably will implode, that the system that's fucking them is some system they could have taken advantage of? Is that your point? That they should have been just as crooked as everyone else? Or maybe they just didn't have the time to be that crooked, or the fucking resources? I don't know what your fucking point is. If you're trying to tell me there are a lot of people out there right now who are in pain and who are poor and who are trying to work and get shit done, there are. Okay, Uncle Dan might be a drifter. Uncle Dan might be a hobo in fucking Little Saigon. But there are a lot of people in Seattle just getting by. And guess what? They don't have $1,000 in savings. They might have a 401k that everyone says, don't open it up, though. Don't take money out of your 401k. It's going to be there for you one day. Yeah, there are a lot of people who have money in retirement funds, and if they had any common sense, they'd start taking it out. But yeah, in terms of cash that they can just go grab, no, most people don't. Most people don't. Even people you think are doing well. Because again, the people that are doing well, they might have kids. They might be raising a family. And it turns out that no matter how well you do, if you live in Seattle, it can still be getting by. Like you could say, oh, you must have a great job. Well, yes, but you live in Seattle, so you're paying for the rent and you're paying for other things. And so at the end of the day, yeah, maybe you have a great job, but you might still just be getting by taking care of your family. That also could be a reality. Why don't we not shame people for not having a lot of cash on hand? And let's just instead think about this from a common sense perspective. I'm going to tell you something that's going to be shocking, and you may not believe this. There are, and there have always been, more poor people than rich people. I'm going to repeat this because I know I just shocked you. Did I just shock you? For all of recorded history, there have always been more poor people than rich people. So spending time shaming poor people, like, I don't know, being a French queen and saying, let them eat cake. Because God, you know, you could eat some cake, load up on those carbs. You know, beheading people is hard work. Get those carbs. That guillotine doesn't run itself. My advice to anybody out there who's doing well is that you don't have to approve of shit you don't like. Like, if you want to send me an email and say, Dan, I think you're a drifter, I think you're a hobo, I mean, you can do this. I'm not sure it's going to make a difference because these are things I already know, but you could tell me that I'm a worthless piece of shit. But my advice is don't treat everybody the way you would treat Uncle Dan. In fact, maybe even don't pretend you understand me and why I do the things I do. When I told you that I feel like this current reality is my dystopia, I wasn't just saying it. It really is, okay? And the horrifying thought is it could get worse from here because I could lose my faith in God and I could find myself in that infinite wilderness of black nothing. And then all of a sudden people will say, well, then what? Why should I do this? Or why should I do that? And my only answer will be there is no fucking reason. I don't want to go there, because once you go there, then you have resigned yourself to humanity simply becoming a monster. And then you have to also accept that humanity might be a crazy monster that will in all likelihood kill itself at some point. And I don't want to go there. I don't. But yes, I'm going to shock you one more time, so listen up, okay? There have always been more poor people than rich people. There have always been more people at the bottom than at the top. You could say that after World War II, blah, 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 income tax, blah, blah, blah. But here's the reality. Whatever accidental set of economic relationships were created by obliterating Japan, Germany, and not trading with the Soviet Union, and basically England being obliterated too, not by us, but hey. Well, the net effect of that is, if you're the only country that isn't blown up, and then you give them money, you give them cash, you know, well, the net effect is, yeah, you do look like you're sitting pretty. But that's not really sustainable. Not unless you intend to blow up half the world every 50 years. My advice is don't mock the poor. Don't shame the poor. It doesn't mean you shouldn't give good advice. If you see someone going down a road where they're going to end up homeless, it's perfectly okay to say, listen, buddy, are you sure you want to take this risk? And if you know that someone is poor, but maybe there's a little change in their life where they could become richer, fine. Give them whatever fucking advice you want to. But please, for your own fucking safety and the safety of your own fucking family, if you want to survive the coming tumult, do not mock the poor. Even if you hate poor people, which I don't know why anybody would hate poor people. It's like saying you hate people with stage 4 cancer, you know, or saying you hate people that are old. I hate old people. I hate poor people. I hate sick people. I don't know why you would hate people who are poor. But even if you hate them, keep it to your fucking self. That's my advice. Unless you want to, you know, end up like so many other French people did in 1789, 90, 91. You know, you can lose your head, or they can lead you onto the magical barge on the River Seine. Oh yeah, where does this barge go? Well, it goes up and down. It goes down 20 feet for, you know, half an hour. Well, that sounds great. We'll be like submarine, you know. You'll be submarine, though, yeah. But you won't have any air. Yeah, guess what? The guillotine during the terror, during the French Revolution, the guillotine was too slow at times. There were too many people to kill. So the French, the revolutionaries, would load people into barges and then sink them and then refloat them. Because that was a fast way to kill people. And another little note, if you're going to like be one of those people who says, well, the Nazis invented this, the Nazis really didn't invent much of anything. When it comes to killing lots of people, that was more or less an invention of the French Revolution. But really, humans invented killing lots of things right from the beginning. So we really shouldn't blame anybody for the murder except for ourselves. Don't mock the poor. Don't pick a fight with a great white shark if you're not in one of those chainmetal suits. Don't stand on I-5 blindfolded at 3 a.m. You might live, but you might not. Don't eat. Don't drink lighter fluid. Don't drink lighter fluid. Don't douse yourself in gasoline and then set yourself on fire. That would be bad for you. And by all means, in the year 2020, don't make fun of poor people. Because it's about the stupidest fucking thing you can do. Don't make fun of poor people. Don't make fun of homeless people. You don't have to approve of stupid decisions that lead to bad outcomes. On the other hand, if you're one of these fuckers who constantly defends the Federal Reserve and tells people, I'm so glad Ben Bernanke saved the day in the year 2. You know what? If you're one of those Ben Bernanke fucks, then yeah, you've got a log in your eye. Before you look at homeless people and poor people and talk about bad decisions, you need to think about the economic decisions made by the rich people for the last fucking, I don't know, forever. But certainly the last 10 years. So yeah. Don't mock poor people because you have no leg to stand on, especially if you're Ben Bernanke. Don't mock the homeless. And if you're going to have an intelligent conversation about dealing with poverty, have that conversation. Just don't put together some documentary with some really controversial title like Seattle is dying. Seattle's not dying, but there are people dying in the streets. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there are more people who are not from here, who are sitting fat and happy in homes, and people from here who are in the streets. Or another way of putting that, I wouldn't be surprised if most of the people talking about Seattle dying and the homeless problem are people that weren't even fucking born here. And the people that were born here, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those guys, those gals, those families are in the streets. That is true. Don't mock. Do not mock poor people. Do not shame poor people. Whatever you're going to do in life, avoid that, because it is. It's like mocking the sick. It's like mocking people who've been injured. It's like making fun of people who've just undergone, you know, a hurricane disaster. Why would you mock them? are you asking for the universe to do the same thing to you and the people you love? Because I promise you, tragedy and trouble, there may be times when the Pez dispenser labeled tragedy gets a little stuck for you and the people you know, but I think that time's running out. And the Pez dispenser labeled tragedy, the universal Pez dispenser, it never runs out. Just as true as nature is not kind, nor linear. Just as true as you should not make fun of poor people unless you're fucking stupid. In addition to all those things, the grand universal Pez dispenser of tragedy and destruction and catastrophe, it never runs out. You might not get something today, but I promise you, there's something for somebody. Have we learned anything today? If you enjoy my podcast and you have taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, and you've taken care of your cats, your dogs, your wives and ex-wives, your 700 children, because you had a lot of kids, man. If you've taken care of everything you need to take care of, and you still have money left over, then you can donate to this podcast. There will be a link to Venmo and PayPal. In the description area of this individual podcast, there's also a link to Venmo and PayPal on my SoundCloud homepage. You don't have to donate. It's not required. Would I love to be able to self-fund as a podcaster and write and publish audiobooks and do shit like that? Fuck. I'd love to do a lot of things, but on the other hand, if I'm in the situation I'm in, the only person to blame is guess who? Me, myself, and I. And that applies to those people at the top who, you know, think that we should come bail them out again like we're doing right now with the push-button quantitative easing. The repo madness, yeah. It applies to them, too. They should take care of their own shit. And since they don't know how, since they constantly complain that we have to save them, oh, Dan, we went to the casino drunk and we lost 20 trillion bucks. Well, listen, buddy, I don't have 50 bucks, so I can't really help you. But here's a baseball bat, and I can knock some sense into you. But before you come to me and the other people who are this close to basically being homeless, why don't you fucking sell a house or two? Why don't you learn to live with only one island? I know you tell people you can't live with anything less than three islands, but don't you think you could learn to live with one island? Or even one chateau? Like one yacht? Maybe even one jet airplane? You could learn to live that way, buddy. So for this Thursday in the Seattle zone, this is Dan Sullivan signing off from Outpost Little Saigon. Things are getting bad here. Nobody trusts anybody. There's still a lot of angry music playing at the Chevron station. There's reason to believe they've doubled food prices at the Chevron, probably other places as well. Are they gouging? I don't know. Are they gouging? These are tough times, baby. Outpost Little Saigon, Seattle, on January the 23rd, right? The 23rd? January the 23rd, 2020, sometime in the evening, Pacific Standard Time, For all you out there dealing with the panic and the chaos in the streets, the mad, mad crowds of people seeking face masks, people seeking after some shelter from the virus. The virus that has already killed approximately 3.6 billion people in Seattle alone. There's blood running in the streets here now. The vampire people are coming up from below. All the scrunklies rule the streets. Yeah, why don't you go down there and make fun of them, buddy? You'll end up in the soup. If your name is Stew. Yeah. Have a good one.